back to Back in My Play. This is going to be episode number 61. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm going to preemptively say that this is going to be a different episode than what you usually get from Back in My Play. Before I go into that any further, I want to introduce my guest for this episode. You may know him as CVX Freak on the internet or on Twitter, and also, of course, from Brave Wave. That's Alex Aniel. I always worry about your last name, Alex.
You pronounced it perfectly. Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
Yeah, and you're coming in from the Tokyo area, so we got a nice big time difference and allowing us to really appreciate the wonders of the low latency that Skype delivers on this stuff.
Yeah. Can you hear me well?
Oh, I can hear you perfectly.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. It's good to be back. It's 10 p.m. here. So Kevin and I are on like completely opposite sides of the world right now. But
yeah.
Thanks to this magic that we call technology.
it works out all right. And, I'll explain. Like I said, this is going to be a little bit different. And I don't know if people follow, you know, both of us have kind of been talking about this topic on Twitter and stuff. And I wrote a two-part series on thefitcast.com, which is what, you know, is, I guess, my paid podcast that I do. And it's really about, I guess, I don't know the best way to put this. Well, maybe I'll even take a step back and say, when we talk about this stuff, we're not trying to convince anyone to live their way differently, to look at video games differently, or, the way that they collect stuff. I think this is going to be very specific to the two of us, and potentially, like, the way that I put it in the post is, like, I'm just telling you the way that I feel, and maybe by me explaining some of this stuff, it might help you, understand the way that you look at some of this stuff and perhaps make some healthier changes in your life. And I mean, yes. Alex, yeah, let's start with you, man. Like, how did you get to this point of like saying, yeah, maybe I have too much Resident Evil stuff and yes. it's time to reduce it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I just want to emphasize what you were saying earlier, that this isn't an indictment on collectors or collecting or
absolutely
any
not
of that stuff, but it's a deeply personal thing, actually. Mm-hmm. Well, not deeply personal in a bad way, but just how, in terms of how I got to this process. I mean, I did talk about this on my Tumblr account a few months ago as well. But
that's right.
Yeah, there was a point where, like, even up until the end of last year when I moved apartments, I moved to a much bigger place. And, I had lived in a very tiny Tokyo apartment for over 3 years, very cramped studio apartment at times with a roommate. So, I was struck with that euphoria of having more, like, two rooms and one room that I could use as an office and basically a playroom. And so I bought these two big shelves. They were pretty big. They took up the entire wall of one of the rooms. And I basically decorated it with my Resident Evil collection. Mm-hmm. And thanks to Brave Wave, I'm traveling back home to San Francisco more often. So over the last few months, I had picked up stuff that I had left in the U.S. for years and brought them back to Tokyo. And there was a point when I realized that, I don't know how to describe it, but I mean, it was cool. I thought it was great that I finally had a gigantic shelf. I could bring almost everything that I've ever collected and put it into one place. Mm-hmm. But I think the turning point for me, and this might sound really silly, was when I ran out of space on this shelf. And this is not a small shelf. It's taller than me. I'm exactly 6 feet. I think the shelf was maybe 6.5 feet, 7 feet maybe. And maybe, how many centimeters? Maybe like 300 centimeters. I don't know how many inches that is. But, all this space, and I still didn't have enough to put everything that I'd ever collected over the last 10 years, which would be game SKUs, soundtracks, books, magazines, freebies that you get at events like TGS, Tokyo Game Show, E3 and Gamescom. Random stuff like coasters from the Biohazard Cafe that was here in Tokyo a few years ago.
That's right.
A few toys that I had collected early on. Like at that point, you know, I was, you know, still adding stuff to the collection that I was bringing back from the States, but I realized that, you know, it wasn't coming together the way I'd wanted it to because I just didn't have enough space. So I had to put things in front of each other. And right. then I was, that was the turning point. That's when I realized, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was that the shelves were so big, I didn't actually have enough room to put a sofa in this playroom. So usually if I wanted to sit down in this playroom, I had to either sit on the floor or sit on my computer chair. So there was this sense of growing dissatisfaction that I had with the collection. And then I guess the next turning point would have been when I read this book that was recommended to me called, what was it called in English? The Art of Tidying Up.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a really popular book in the States here now, too.
Yeah, and
it's a Japanese author, right?
Exactly, yes. So I read the book in both languages just to make sure I got the nuance of the original correctly. But I guess I was late to the party in that sense because the book's like 5 years old. But I read the book, and then the author, Marie Kondo, you know, mentioned this about how, you know, people place so much value on maintaining their physical possessions because... Mm-hmm. I think the main points were how much money you invested into it or the sentiment behind the product. Like if you got it as a gift or you got it to celebrate some event or some important milestone in your life or, you know, being apprehensive against waste. So when I read the book, I realized, you know, the Resident Evil collection, it wasn't so much having everything in that shelf in one place that made me happy, but it was actually a lot of the memories that I have associated with being a fan of this game series. And I can go into detail later if you want, but I realized, yeah, I mean, the games meant, at the end of the day, they meant nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was painful, not painful, but a little bit like stressful to make that first step of, you know, taking something out of the shelf, putting it in a bag, and then taking it to the buyback store, which is quite common here in Tokyo, and then getting rid of it. But, you know, once you make that first step, then I think it becomes progressively easier, and then you kind of snowball, and you kind of move forward after that.
Yeah, and I think there's so many ways that we can go at how... You know, I mean, at least for me personally, like, you know, it wasn't just like one thing that made me want to finally. And I really do recommend, and I will, you know, be straight up. I think those two pieces that I wrote for thefakecast.com, like those are like probably two of the most personal things that I've ever written on the internet.
Indeed,
in my life.
Yeah, I was quite surprised, but it was very pleasant to read at the same time.
Well, it's like at some point, you know. How much do I really have to hide? And in terms of like myself becoming healthier, if it can help some other people, like if it could help one other person, you know, say, all right, maybe this isn't, this is something that's like, and this is what happens. Like this stuff does end up dominating your life. I look at, you know, where I was at multiple times in the last, you know, 5 years, once you get a working wage where you could spend money to then amass a ton of stuff, whether it be, like for me at one time, it was arcade machines. Like I had 9 arcade machines in my living room to the point where my dog could barely like come into the living room. And I was like, man, this is nuts. Because he was like afraid of gigantic arcade machines, like, you know, all over the place. And, or even just... Literally, like you mentioned the shelving, and I haven't even thought of that when I was writing these pieces. But like when I was looking to get new shelves, I'm like, man, yeah, my collection's getting big. I probably spent like on a Sunday like 5 hours just looking at different shelving units and thinking like,
oh, wow,
what's going to be the best one? What's going to make it look the best? I want to make sure that the shelves aren't too deep because you don't want like the games to be way back in the shelf and stuff like that. You want them to be prominent. And then it also makes you think, all right, who am I presenting these to? Like, who's going to, like, come over and be like, you know, I have friends that like video games, but they're not always going to be like, oh, man, let me, like, spend, like, all this time looking at your shelf and see all the stuff that you own. It's more like, yeah, let's play some, like, usually if, like, people are coming over, it's like, yeah, let's play some Street Fighter. All right, I know I have, like, these three Street Fighter games, which are the best versions of these games that we're going to play. We don't have to scour the whole thing. So, and I'll mention the name of that book if people want to check it out. It's also, I listened to it on Audible and it was pretty good. The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, the Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing. Another book that I'll recommend is Essentialism, which is not necessarily about owning less stuff. It's more about just making sure that everything that you do has a purpose and a focus, and it's not just like, you know, you could go to a shop in like Akihabara and go into that junk bin and pick up 100 carts for like $100, but I mean, it's usually in the junk bin for a reason because they're terrible, terrible games, or, I mean, you might find some good stuff in there, but how many games you really need to own? Are you ever going to really play this stuff? Or is it just to like amass more stuff, which is something that is something that we do. And is that what it was kind of like for you? It's like you needed, was it like almost like a completionist thing of having every piece of Resident Evil stuff? Like, literally going to the cafe and getting the coasters and stuff.
That's exactly what it was.
How many copies of Resident Evil 3 Nemesis do you need?
Oh, that's one of the ones where relatively few copies exist.
Oh, really? Like across
that's
like, across the regions?
That's funny you mentioned that of all games. It has the fewest number of ports. I don't think it ever had a limited edition, so it was never re-released like on the same platform like the first two games. Oh my god, I can go on all day, but
no DualShock edition, no Director's Cut edition.
Nope. Yeah, that game came out once, and then it was ported on other platforms. But then the actual content was pretty consistent, you know, with very few exceptions. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil 4, on the other hand, Evil 5, on the other hand. but yeah, I mean, just to kind of explain to listeners who might not be familiar with what I was collecting, but my standard was any SKU of Resident Evil from any country I would collect. So I mentioned this in the Tumblr post, but I think the most obscure SKU I ever bought was Resident Evil 5 on PC in Thailand. Like, it wasn't even a pirated version. It was a real official, you know, had the proper casing, shrink wrap, Thai writing on the box with the official art. And I mean, it was too good and too expensive to be a fake. So I knew that it was probably officially released there. And I bought that maybe on a trip to Bangkok like 5 or 6 years ago.
How much time, like, and maybe this is a good point to jump in and talk about, like what I in the article I called it like the hunt, which is like how it is fun to like just try like, oh man, I finally tracked down this version of this game, or I found this game at a price that's not like ridiculous.
That's a really interesting feeling. And when you want to be a completionist like I wanted to be, you know, you realize, oh, a limited edition SKU of Resident Evil 5 came out in Korea and it looks amazing, but I must have it. But, you know, importing Korean games isn't exactly common, right? So what am I going to do? Go to Korea and go buy it? And a few years ago when I just started working, of course, you know, that wasn't financially very prudent, but as I started, you know, working for a few years, you know, I could afford to travel more often. To answer your question, I was shopping in a mall in Seoul one day. I think it was called the Coex Mall. And they had this game shop there. And I saw that limited edition Biohazard 5 Korean version for Xbox 360 with a really oversized box. Gosh, I can't remember what was inside. I have to go into the other room and check. I still have it, actually. But I was like, wow, like I couldn't buy this when RE5 came out like 5 years ago, but now I have it with me. Amazing. Yeah, it was a really good feeling back when I still wanted to actually collect anything and everything Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And on that point, I know I did buy a few pirated versions of Resident Evil games with really bizarre mishmash of artwork in countries like Indonesia, Korea.
Wait, like for China. You know what? The cart that I always see is like Resident Evil 5 for the Famicom.
Oh, I never knew about that. What is that?
I think they just like use the cover art of Resident Evil 5 on the Famicom. Like I always see it like on eBay. I don't know. Again, this is one of those things where you get to learn all this crazy crap because it's like, yeah, I used to have eBay alerts for the words Famicom and the words like Saturn or Sega Saturn and stuff like that.
Oh, I see it. This is Chinese, yeah.
Of course it is. I have a nice Chinese, and actually I should probably just end up sending this over to Kurt Collada, but I have a Chinese bootleg of Castlevania for the Famicom, which was that cart is like, if you want to get an authentic one, it's actually super rare because it was a disc system game. And like, look, like all this information we've also amassed, like all this stuff that we've learned just from all this research that we do and all the, like I also mentioned in the post and yeah, you know, this episode is going to be jumping all over the place, but, I could tell you, I could help you put a like Sega Astro City cabinet back together. I could tell you about all the monitor issues with the Sega Blast City cabinets. I could tell you, I could help you recap a monitor. Like I could, do all this stuff for you during that period when I went down the rabbit hole of owning arcade games and all this stuff. Like you need to learn a whole new language of how to deal with that stuff. But I use the word obsessive, and that is how it gets it, how it is for me. It's an obsession of like when I'm in Tokyo, like if I'm in Tokyo, I make sure I set aside days for buying video games when I could be seeing the amazing things that Japan has to offer. Like I could go down to Kyoto for a day and like check out some temples, but no, I'm going to spend all day going through every shelf of every retro shop in Akihabara or in Shinjuku and make sure that I've left no stone unturned. Because you never know. I'm only there once. I got to buy every single game I can possibly buy.
Right, right. I mean, I when I first visited Japan 11 years ago, that was definitely something that I was doing. Like I went to Akihabara with my mom. I was 17 at the time and we spent the entire day there and I didn't even buy that much in the grand scheme of things. But I was just like, wow, I need this game and that game.
Just looking at stuff.
Yeah, it was very euphoric. I mean, and Akihabara was much better back then than it is now. I'll tell you that. I mean, Akihabara is barely a shell of what it used to be. So if you're still getting enjoyment out of going there, then I think that's actually quite amazing.
There's still four or five shops that's worth stopping in if you want to buy some games while you're there.
Yeah. I mean, there's Super Potato and the Soft Maps and there's a Mandarake there, I think.
When Mohammed and I went shopping together, that was the place that we probably spent the most time in because their stock is still pretty good.
Right, right. I mean, it's weird and this might sound very, very, maybe even insulting to most people who would love to visit Japan. But even though I've lived in Tokyo for 8 years, I think I go to Akihabara like twice a year.
No, that would make sense. Like even as soon as I'm like done there, I want to get the hell out of there just because of
it's
not like a cool place to hang out in, especially with just like the overwhelming creepiness of the place these days.
Right. There aren't many great restaurants or cafes there. And I mean, it was a lot funner years ago. Maybe up until the end of 2007 was when I could say that Akihabara was still a very respectable place for game shopping. But now, I mean, it's just one of several avenues that you can go on for collecting games. I mean, it's I don't think it'll ever be irrelevant, but you know, I think it's just, it's not an Akihabara problem, but it's just the industry itself. You know, it's shrinking here in Japan. It's been shrinking for a long time. Offset only by smartphones and entities that don't really require physical packaging.
Right. And just for a reference, I'll make sure to put this in the show notes too. But if you want to check out Alex's Tumblr post, it's at cvxfreak.tumblr.com. And I remember you posting this stuff too. And like, in my post, I mentioned that it's always been like a battle. Like, always, like, it's I'll get rid of a ton of stuff, but then going back to Japan in April, of course, I come back ton of stuff, and fight it all over again.
I should mention that I've actually tried pruning the collection in the past. I think the last time I tried was maybe 1 or 2 years after I had moved to Tokyo. So I moved here in 2007. So maybe around late 2008, I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I mean, I was a graduate student at the time, so you know, I didn't want to waste too much money, you know, collecting games and such. But then I think I bounced back after like 6 months. I realized that, you know, maybe around 2009 that I wanted to collect again, so I ended up repurchasing a few of the things that I had sold. So I guess second time's a charm, or
Well, it's I think it's almost like excuse me, like building up a, you know, your strength when it comes to this stuff. Like, it's like you literally getting in your reps. It's like whenever like I've read a couple books and talked to some psychologists like Georgia Dow about this, about like you literally need to almost build up the strength to be able to finally do something. And you do have to fail a couple times. Like, there's some people, like, you'll hear stories about people that try to lose weight and they always like go on a diet and then 2 weeks later they fail. But sometimes it's not just like the diet that works. It's that it's, you know, them learning from all their previous failures and, you know, knowing that, you know, that failure is just going to lead you back to where you were before. So
yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of things. It basically, any kind of social or emotional issue that any normal, reasonable person can go through, you know, it requires, you know, that moment when you realize there's a problem, and then you have to fix it, and then, you know, you get motivated, and then you kind of fall again, but then you kind of bounce back up. So this is no different, I think, than any of that.
And you know, we'll keep moving forward, but I would recommend people go check out you know, both our you know, posts on those things. And like I've said before, I got like personal in the post. I don't know, it's a little bit harder to talk about that stuff you know, when you're actually talking about it. It's actually really easy to write that stuff down and then not really think about it too much. But I will say for me, it was really realizing that I love video games, and it's been a really important part of my life since I was, you know, a kid. Like, I literally have a picture in the post of me as like a 4-year-old wrapped up in a blanket with an NES controller coming out, you know, or a cord coming out from underneath, with me probably playing like The Legend of Zelda or something like that. And like, I love this stuff, but at the point it was having a negative effect on my life in terms of the way that I thought about that stuff, becoming obsessive at, you know, times when I had the time to become obsessive, when making sure I had the perfect Nintendo DS collection before all those games like disappear, which they won't. Like I said, going to Japan and making sure that I buy every possible game that I can buy, because, you know, when's the next time that I'll ever be there, even though I go twice a year. And along with that, there was some, you know, negative things where I would just like completely allow my, you know, good nutrition to fly out the window. And,
the picture of the pizza.
Sorry.
You shouldn't do that.
I know. And it was just like bad. Like, I type in pizza in Google and that's what it gives me. I'm like, oh man, I could probably go for some pizza right now. But, you know, again, I would really recommend if you're listening to this, like, and you are curious, just go read that stuff. And again, realize that I think if you have a collection of like 1,000 games that you're proud of and that you're able to share it with a lot of people and it doesn't affect your life, and you can, if you don't have to like look at that wall and think, man, there's all this money here that's sitting on my wall that I don't really don't care about, like if they left tomorrow and I could use that money. I think like you mentioned this in your post or on Twitter that like, yeah, that's money I could like use for a vacation or a trip or on something else that's going to be more fulfilling in life.
Right, right. And I mean, I guess, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. So I should explain that. I mean, partially out of necessity for work, but I also do a lot of traveling these days. And I've always had another, like an alternative interest in traveling. Going to a lot of countries and, you know, doing stuff, learning new languages. And I realized that that's what was making me a lot happier than Resident Evil these days. So, you know, I realized I can spend $500 and get every SKU of Resident Evil Revelations 2, or I can use that $500 and go on a week-long vacation to Vietnam or some country. It can be anywhere. So I realized, you know, that's more lucrative. But I mean, in order to explain how we're dealing with it post purge, right?
Right.
You know, after getting rid of our stuff, like I mentioned earlier, but some of the memories that I have associated with Resident Evil are quite strong. And I think that, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I think I've been very fortunate in having met a lot of the staff members over the years, having spoken to them, having friends out at Capcom and other companies, and, you know, being in Tokyo where a majority of Resident Evil related events happen, you know, I'd been lucky. The other events usually happen in Osaka or San Francisco, and I'm from San Francisco. So I think that, you know, even other hardcore fans, and they're out there and they're very good people, but I think I've been very lucky and very fortunate to mention maybe like the top five memories that I have associated with Resident Evil. The first one would be having dinner with Shinji Mikami few years ago in Osaka. I mean, I don't think anything's really going to top that at this point, right? So, and that was like a long time ago. So it's not like it was a recent development. The next one, going to Universal Studios Japan and attending their Halloween Horror Night when they had this big Raccoon City imitation, I don't know how you call it, amusement park.
Oh, wow.
Section. Yeah, this was back in 2012. But you have to have been there to really understand what it was like. But it was amazing. They had people in Resident Evil costumes all dressed up. There was a Nemesis and a Tyrant.
No
and
way.
Sirens blasting. Yeah, I should show you some photos of this after we're done. And maybe if you want to post it on your blog, I'll let you do. The third one would be the Resident Evil Cafe in Shibuya. The fourth one, when Resident Evil 5 came out in the States, Capcom USA threw a launch party in Union Square in San Francisco, and the development staff from Japan were there. They had this big tent in Union Square, and I was actually the first one in line. And I remember being interviewed by Jeff Keighley.
Oh, really?
But I mean, during the interview, I played dumb. I didn't, you know, discuss my obsession with the series at that point. I had given them generic answers like, oh, yeah, I've been waiting a few years for Resident Evil 5. I hope it's good. Even though I had beaten the Asian version like a week before. So, you know, I didn't want to, you know, come off as a little as too pretentious or obsessed. And at that event, I also talked to the staff of Resident Evil 5 because I was probably like the only fan there who could speak Japanese. Right. I think I was fluent in Japanese by that point. So when I spoke to them, they were pleasantly surprised that they could talk to people in something other than broken English. So we'd end up talking to each other every now and then throughout the night. So yeah, that was fun. The fifth one would maybe be the gun shooting range that they opened here in Tokyo a few years ago as well. Where you could shoot posters of Resident Evil monsters. And
is that something that's, I mean, guns are pretty much I mean, are there a lot of gun ranges in Japan?
They're not real gun ranges. What do you call them? They're pellet guns.
Oh, like air rifles.
Air rifles, yeah. So so they teamed up with this shop that lets you shoot stuff, and it was fun. So I mean, it's thinking about times like that made me realize that, you know, I don't need a collection for any reason anymore. Like it
you got those memories.
Right. And knowing Capcom, there's going to be more to come. So, you know, hopefully I don't relapse and start collecting again at some point. So,
well, I think you've definitely, I mean, just hearing you speak about it, like you've definitely gotten to a point where, you know, there isn't a going back. And that's like the same thing, you know, for me, is that I do have a much better understanding of, you know, myself and the way that I look at this stuff, and how, as a almost like I'm going to be 30 in a couple of months, like how games are going to fit into my life going forward, and how they're going to best enhance my life and not necessarily ever, and they won't like have an opportunity to be a negative. Like they shouldn't be a burden. And that's what happens when, not for everybody, but you know, sometimes when you do amass like so much stuff to the point where like I was looking at renter's insurance because I'm like, man, on my wall I have like $10,000 worth of video games and arcade hardware. What the hell am I doing? You know,
right?
What, like that's $10,000 that could go, like you said, like it could go towards like an around the world trip, or in a I could put that into like, you know, a mutual fund and make some money. So for me, like that's the way that I was kind of looking at it. And maybe, you know what I'm going to do right now is we're going to take a break so I can put in my favorite aspect of video games, and that's some music. So you guys can hear some music, and then we're going to come back and we will talk about, you know, the process of getting rid of the stuff and how we made those decisions and, you know, where we are going forward. And there will be some more like retro game talk. So hopefully if you've stuck around to this point, we're going to continue to talk about, you know, what we love about this stuff. And I think you've been able to tell by now with how we've been talking about this stuff, we still love this stuff. It's just,
absolutely.
It's just like, you don't need to love it so much where you have 500, 800, 1,000 pieces of things that make you think about it. So here's some music. Stick around. We'll be right back. Got to hear some awesome music, and now I want to kind of venture to what that process was like for both of us. And again, if you go to cvxfreak.tumblr.com, you'll actually see that Alex has some for sale stuff up on there. He's starting to get rid of some of that stuff. So what has that process been like, and what's the progress that you've made so far?
Right. So, in Tokyo, the buyback market is very active. So, I mean, I think there was an article from, who was it, Chris Kohler, just a few days ago about the whole buyback market. But basically, it's pretty big. Mm-hmm. It's pretty big. If you have something in Tokyo, you can probably sell it somewhere, like one or two stations away, max.
Right.
And there's a really huge resale market. And basically, video games, music, clothing, jewelry, of course, books. Yeah. basically anything can be resold. I mean, you don't get that much money in the grand scheme of things, but I mean, you know, knowing how small houses in Tokyo can be, mm-hmm. You know, people, you know, are less interested in the return and more interested in the ability to declutter and mm-hmm. open up space in their own homes. So, yeah, it's easy to sell games in Japan. It's very, very easy to just, you know, take a bag of games, go to the store, whether it's Tsutaya, which is kind of a media store. They sell music, books, CDs, games, new and used, or Book Off, which is a very prominent book reseller, but they also sell games. Trader, Softmap, other retailers. Amazon Japan takes trade-ins now, just like they do in the States. There's Yahoo Auctions, but I think the easiest and most straightforward way is to trade in. But unlike the States, the base value is denominated in cash. Ooh. So there's no minus 10% ridiculousness, store credit ridiculousness that GameStop does.
GameStop, man.
In the States, yeah. You know, the base values are cash, and, you know, you do have the option of getting store credit, but they actually add 10%, right? So,
oh, cool.
I mean, I guess it's the same thing in the end, but...
Yeah, the way that they, I guess...
They present it.
Exactly.
Yeah, is less insulting. But yeah, I mean, so it was very easy. So once I decided, okay, I need to get rid of this stuff now, what do I do? So I looked at the... At first, I wanted to start with non-essentials, so I pulled out, like, all those greatest hits and best prices, mm-hmm. all the re-releases, because there's no price difference in Japan whether you sell the original SKU or the greatest hits equivalent. So I took out all those. I had maybe 25 games, and then... I said, so this is a test. If I can do this, maybe I can move on to the next step. So I sold them all, took about maybe 20 minutes, got cash for it, and then I went back home, and then I realized that I hadn't regretted it one bit. So, and it was nice to have the extra cash. So mm-hmm. I think I don't know what I did with that money. I think I just put it in my savings or something, but... I decided, you know, to go on to doing other SKUs, like even some quote-unquote limited edition SKUs that I guess were rare in a sense, but were not very practical to keep around. Mm-hmm. I got rid of those. So maybe an example of that would be Biohazard Outbreak with the PlayStation 2 modem. So that was kind of an oversized box. And I mean, it's relatively rare, but I was like, you know, maybe... Like, as a package, it's not that interesting anyway, so I got rid of that. And mm-hmm. eventually, I had gotten rid of enough that I actually got rid of my two shelves, the actual shelves, which I sold on Craigslist.
Wow.
So, all in all, I think I made a good maybe $1,000 to $2,000 just selling stuff mm-hmm. via buyback. Wow. At the various retailers. I did a little bit on eBay too when I went back to the States. And to be fair, I still have a lot of stuff to get rid of. Most of them are PAL games because there's no market for that here in Japan or in the States. I'm making some progress in getting rid of my American collection as well. So it's an ongoing process, and it's not something you can just do all at once. Especially if you were very passionate about this hobby. Mm-hmm. So you just got to take it step by step, you know, start with the non-essentials and then kind of work your way up. I mean, I did get rid of one very rare item that was actually very nice to have, but it was a test to see, it was a test of my willpower. So that would have been the Biohazard Collector's Box for GameCube. A nice box of five of the GameCube Biohazard games that came out.
Cool.
Not including four. It was a really nice box, but the resale value of that was high. It was like around the price that I had paid for 10 years ago. So mm-hmm. if anything, I would have come out even by getting rid of it. So I tested the waters with that, and I haven't regretted it. So... I'm trying to see what I can get rid of next.
It almost is like the same effect of like finding this stuff. It's like, all right, now what else can I take off this shelf?
right? You kind of get addicted to, you know, the concept of earning more money and, you know, having more space in your apartment. And then you start to dream about what you can do with that newfound space or that right. money that you got. So, like, I bought myself a sofa bed and put it in where what was formerly the spot for half of the Resident Evil shelf. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know if you could tell, but my room is kind of echoing now because the shelves are gone. Can you tell? Or
I mean, not really, but okay. You know, again, sure. maybe that's almost like a downside. Is I'm gonna lose the soundproofing of my room when I want to do recordings and stuff.
yeah. But yeah, it's easy if you're in Tokyo. Probably not as easy if you're in the States. I mean, maybe you can talk more about that. Yeah, I want to take a trip to London one of these days and just get rid of my Resident Evil PAL collection en masse. That's probably the region I need the least. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like I can play them anyway. So, yeah, that was it. It was straightforward, but maybe the process took me about 2 months, 2 to 3 months before I talked about it.
It's totally tough, and you know, I kind of had like a similar approach to you, and actually what I did was, and you know, I go a little bit more in depth in the post, and for me it wasn't just like one thing. It's just like I had just so many games across so many platforms and like the consoles and all that stuff, because, you know, why are you going to have the games unless you have the consoles, and those take up space and all that. So and, you know, I like literally had like, I had 4 Super Famicoms. Like, who needs 4 Super Famicoms, even though they are really cool? But so for me, like, I actually almost did like an inverse thing of what I would normally do, or what you would think would make sense. And I put together a 30 quart storage container, and I put in what I absolutely like. This is the stuff that is important. It's really important to me. I have really specific memories associated with it, you know, it could also be something that I really want to do an episode of Back of My Play, you know, for this game. That might be like a Ninja Gaiden 2 or something like that. Like, yeah, I don't necessarily have super fond memories aside from renting the game a lot, but it's a game that I want to like play through for the show. So, and I gave myself a limit. Like, I had these, and again, we talked about like shelving and stuff. I had this big like $100 IKEA bookshelf filled with stuff, and like I said, all right, that needs to go because it dominated my living room. Like, you can't come into my living room without like getting smacked in the face with this huge wall of video games. So,
yeah,
I actually went in on Amazon. I got like 2 cheap $24 bookshelves, like ones for, you know, books and my music, and one for, you know, one was just going to be like, all right, if I have video games, like, they have to fit on this shelf. Otherwise they have to go. And, you know, what is left on there is, you know, newer stuff like my 3DS games that, you know, are current, like I would call current gen stuff that I still want to play. And I also have like some like retro stuff that's quick and easy to pick up. Like, I still have, like, I don't have personal memories of Famicom games, but I do have these NES games, but I like having the Famicom versions because I think they look cooler and they're also more compact, and they are associated with my fantastic trips to Japan, and also like times where it is like memories of like hanging out with Mohammed and like, you know, man, yeah, like I found this Famicom game in like Trader, and like, oh, I couldn't believe we found this game, or it was actually a game like Mohammed recommended, and like its association, like my friendship with him. So it's
right.
That is, you know, added importance to that game. So like, that's the stuff that I held on to, but, And also, like, there was like this bin of like, I have this bin that is, it's social games. Like, it is, there are games that I'm never going to really play unless I have people over, but they will be used to enhance a social experience. And it's like your golden eyes, or like my Sega Saturn is really not something I'm going to play single player stuff on. It's when I want to play arcade perfect versions of games, with friends that come over, you pull out the Sega Saturn and a couple controllers in those games, and I don't need those out. I can leave them in a bin and just pull them out when I need to. So that's like that stuff. And I will, and this is going to sound, you know, nuts, but I'll literally like go through a quick, like, these are just like bullet points that I put in the post, but in terms of like consoles, I got rid of my PlayStation 4 and all the games, the Wii U and all the games, which I know like people are going to say.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's, and again, I know this is another thing that I look at. It's like, all right, if I have time today, what am I going to most likely want to, like, what am I going to play games on? And I love my 3DS as much as like, I think, you know, the eShop system is not super great. And, you know, the hardware, it could be better. It's actually pretty good now, but I love the 3DS library, and there's so many games I've yet to play on that thing, like Fire Emblem and Tales of the Abyss and like all these other great games that, like, if I have time, like, I'd probably play it on that. And I looked at the future of these systems too, like the Wii U down the road. It has like Zelda, which
might not come out for that system.
Right. So, right. And I totally use that as a justification. It's like, yeah, that'll probably be either cross, Twilight Princess was, or, you know, if it's like one of those things where this is the best game of all time, by the time it comes out, I could probably just like pick up a used Wii U for like $150 in the game and then sell it when I'm done playing it. But
yeah.
So Wii U and all the games. So yeah, my digital purchases are, you know, in my Nintendo graveyard, but that's okay. I didn't buy a ton of stuff digitally. Xbox 360 and all the games, PlayStation 3 and all the games. And that was a big one because with PlayStation Plus, I've bought so many digital games on the PlayStation 3. And obviously, it's a great way to play PS2 digital games and PS1 digital games. And even, like, there's so many great HD, like Okami HD, which I, you know, is going to maybe be one of the games I regret never actually playing through. But lots of stuff on there, but it's okay. Like, I would, like, that's one of those things where it's like I would stress out about having those games and not having the time to play it. And then just like it would just too much mental fatigue spent on just knowing that stuff. Got rid of two Super Famicom, so I still got two just in case. I got
If you don't mind me asking, why do you have more than one? Are they like different colors or different designs? Or,
well, it was a case of like every time I went to Japan, I would just like, it was almost like, yeah, you're going to bring back some green tea Kit Kats and you're going to bring back a Super Famicom because you never know when you're going to need a Super Famicom. And I just love the design and the aesthetics of that console. Like, even today, it looks really great.
I have an SNES, yeah, but I've never had a Super Famicom.
Oh, it's nice. It's got, I mean, it just like the Super Nintendo just kind of looks, I mean, people have talked about this before, but anyways, so the Super Nintendo is gone. I do have a way to play Super, like, US games on the Super Famicom, so it's not a big deal. It's the same exact hardware. It's just like a region lock with plastic.
Cut the nub off, right?
Exactly. That's all it is. So I got rid of a Sega Genesis and all but six games. I held on to like Streets of Rage 1 and 2, Sonic 1 and 2, Mercs, NHL 94. And think that's like it. Just because, again, those are games I have great memories of. For Streets of Rage, it's obviously Yuzo Koshiro's unbelievable soundtracks, and the games are pretty good too. DSIs that I had. Just like I did three DSIs sitting around. DSI. I had five DS Lites, all right? Jesus. Because this is an example of what happens. Like, when I really got into, like, DS collecting, I made sure, like, I bought, like, a bunch of DS Lites when I was in Japan because they were, like, 1,400 yen at one store, and I bought all of them because they were in perfect shape. And it's, like, it's $10. Like, of course I'm going to buy a DS Lite for $10, and why not? Why buy one when I could have bought, like, I think about like three of them, excuse me, at that store. So,
right.
Again, irrational, obsessive, didn't make sense. And that's why I still have plenty of DS games that I can play on the one DS Lite that I'm holding on to and the one DSi that I'm holding on to that are like in new condition if I ever want to play them on those. And I have two 3DSs in my Japanese and my US 3DS that I can play that stuff on too. So,
right.
PlayStation 2 and all the games, my PC Engine and all the games, and literally I think like I had almost 200 loose games from carts to discs to, you know, whatever that I got rid of. And I used the same thing that you did. I went to, and this is in the US, like you can kind of compare these prices because all these trade-in places, they have online systems where you can actually look up the prices online. So that's like Best Buy, which I actually made use of because I have, you know, I buy new games at Best Buy when they come out. So it's like whatever, that's cash to me. Best Buy, GameStop, and Amazon, and of course eBay, which I used for higher price items that I could sell as a single item and not have to worry. Like part of this getting rid of stuff is like you don't want to like make 400 listings on eBay or 38 postings on Craigslist and spend hours doing that stuff. Part of the reason that we're doing this is to like get some time back. So you know, I just went to Craigslist with some big bulk. Like I got rid of like two of those big storage containers full of stuff on Craigslist, and then like the Wii U and the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 3, like those went to Amazon. And like Amazon credit is cash. Like that might as well be straight cash.
Yeah. Amazon's probably the best, most practical use.
And their trade-in credit is usually superior to everyone else's, I found.
Sure.
Especially for like what I guess would be last, and like now PS3 and Xbox stuff, Xbox 360 stuff, GameStop is not going to give you money for that stuff. They don't want it anymore. Like I think the trading credit on an Xbox 360 was $30 at GameStop, where Amazon gave me $71. So
360, not bad.
Yeah, like yeah. Whatever. It was whatever. Just sitting. I was literally holding on to it to someday play Shenmue 2, but it's okay. I think we're going to get an HD re-release of that at some point anyways. So I think, and I'll just like go through this because it's two lines, but like really what I have left over is like my PlayStation Vita, which I absolutely love, my 3DSs and the libraries that I have for them. Like I literally just got a new PS Vita game and Persona 4 Dancing All Night, which kicks ass. Like that is, I love rhythm games. So, that's great. And the Famicom games, some Super Famicom games, some Saturn games, and I mean that's kind of it. And an Xbox One, believe it or not, which like surprised me that I kept the Xbox One over my PS4. But I think they're getting really close to having multi-platform games like almost as good. Like Metal Gear Solid 5 is a great example. Like they've kind of figured out the Xbox One, and also,
I've been talking about getting rid of my Resident Evil collection this whole podcast, but I did get rid of other stuff as well. I actually got rid of my PS4, which turned out to be a good decision because the price dropped. So if I ever need one again at some point, I mean,
right? You can always pick up another one. It's not like the stuff is hard to get.
Yeah,
there's a game that like everyone was playing and you really wanted to be a part of it. It's just like you go down to the store and you pick one up.
Yeah. And I got rid of my Japanese Wii U. I kept my American one. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, getting rid of, those systems that you don't need, definitely, especially in the physical sense, opens up a lot of space. And, but I do think that, to be honest, you did definitely, I don't want to say go crazy, but that is quite a lot of systems you had there at one time.
But it's just like that stuff really sat there. Like I bought that PlayStation 2 like a year ago. I haven't turned it on since I bought it. And I bought it like in that case of, man, there might be a day where I want to go back and play a bunch of PS2 games. But you know what? Probably not. Like I don't even have enough time to play the stuff that's coming out today that I want to play. And if I do play, like I was looking at it as like there's a bunch of RPGs that came out on the PlayStation 2 that are really, really great and that I might want to play someday, but I still haven't finished Chrono Trigger. I still haven't finished Persona 4 Golden, and that's another thing is like right now the main two games that I'm playing right now are Persona 4 Golden because I need to start finishing stuff and I have to stop playing RPGs for 10 hours and then going and doing something else and then never coming back to it. That was a big thing for me. And, even like I said, with the Xbox One, like games are getting pretty close to it. And most of the exclusive games like that I want to play, I'll be real. Like I want to play Halo 5. I'm sure it's going to be a nice 6-hour adventure that I can have fun with. And, they actually had a really good E3, with like even stuff like Scalebound and ReCore, and PlayStation 4 doesn't really have that for me right now. I mean, they'll have Uncharted at some point that I'm sure I'll want to play down the road, but like, I got $260 trade in for my PlayStation 3 on Amazon. And that was almost like what I paid for it because it was in a bundle with Batman, which I got $40 for. So it's not like I didn't really lose a ton of money on it.
Yeah, if it's a next-gen system or a current-gen system, I mean, you have a lot of time. Those systems should be around for a few years. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the easiest stuff to get rid of. But I'm just wondering, like, how would you choose which console to play what game on? I mean, you had like five DS Lites at one point. So
I know. Well, it's all dumb circumstances. Like I bought all the DSIs when GameStop was actually clearancing them out. So they had a ton of brand new consoles for, I believe they were $40. So like I was looking at it as I'm really, into the DS right now. I want to make sure I have a nice piece of hardware to play on it down the road. And then it was a case of, oh mate, I want to own all the different colors. So I had like a lime green one, I had a black one, I had a white one, I had a red one, I had a blue one. I even picked up a pink one from Japan because I love the design of the console. I love the matte console. It's always way better than the glossy. And it was a completionist thing. And it was also like a what if, like maybe I want to have this stuff and I have to buy it now because it's just going to get harder or more expensive down the road to get in the condition that I want it to be in. So it's irrational. Like it's irrational thinking,
right?
But you rationalize it to be happy in doing what you're doing at that point.
I think just to kind of get it out there, I don't think any system released in the last 10 years will ever be hard to come by, at least for the foreseeable future. I mean, the Famicom, Super Famicom, NES, maybe, but
there's still stacks of those. Like if you really need to get them, or you can go now on like eBay, you can get Super Famicoms and you can like shipping internationally is really not bad these days. So you can buy all that stuff whenever you want. It's just like, it's irrational thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair, it was pretty rare at one point when the internet wasn't as developed as it was now, and there was less social media. But now, I mean, if you're gonna grab after the 3DS, it gets retired. If you're gonna grab a bunch of 3DSs, worrying you'll never find one again, I think that's crazy because anything mass made these days will probably not ever be rare. Mm-hmm. I think that time. That's kind of past.
And that's...
It's not like getting a Sega CD, which might be a little hard, right?
So, or working Sega CD, yeah. Right.
Yeah, disk-based systems, maybe there's a bit of an issue there, but I still think they're generally very reliable. So.
And this is this was a big... I mean, that was a lot of stuff, but in the months prior, like in the last couple months, I got rid of my consoleized Neo Geo MVS and all the games associated with it. I got rid of my Famicom Twin and all my disc games. Like, I've been slowly getting rid of a lot of stuff, but this list in, like, the last 2 weeks was just... Like I just looked at that wall. It's like this thing needs to come down, and I need to get a hold of this stuff. And with all this, it's for me especially. It's about being more mentally healthy and prioritizing a lot of things in my life, and knowing that like I don't want video games to be as big of a priority or as have as big of a hold on my life as they previously did. I want them to come into play when it makes sense and when it's gonna make my life better. That's it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to give anyone the impression that video games are bad or liking video games is a bad thing. You know, it's like I mentioned earlier, you know, if you have like, for example, weight problems, you know, going on a diet and improving your diet is one thing, but then no one's telling you never to eat pizza or ice cream again. Right.
So, if anything, that's like the worst way to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's why people fail, is they think they can never have something that they really desire ever again. That's when they have relapses. And we're not saying this is for people that want to have more, you know, a little heroin every now and then is okay. It's not something
we're talking
about video games, and we're talking about, like, you know, food and stuff.
Right. Food. I don't know. Like, if you have a sex addiction, fix it, but no one's ever telling you not to have sex ever again. So
it's
the same underlying logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in terms of not zeroing it out, I think you got to keep the stuff that really means a lot to you as well. I mean, I think you explained a lot of the practical aspects, and you did touch upon, you know, the stuff that had good memories with them.
Yeah.
For me, I kept stuff that was very rare but awesome as well. So I think one of the coolest things I kept was that Biohazard 5th Anniversary, briefcase, metallic briefcase.
Nice.
That's something I'm never getting rid of. I'm keeping the Leon jacket that came out a few years ago.
God, I remember. Yeah, I remember you telling that story on like 8.4 or something like that. It was like that was like super expensive, right?
At the time, it was $1,300 US to buy that jacket. Oof. I mean, the yen's plunged a lot since then, so it's probably closer to like $750 now. But I guess, you know, now that I mentioned the yen, it's probably not helping that the yen's so cheap these days and everything here is very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
but I kept the Biohazard Code Veronica Dreamcast that Shinji Mikami and Kato-san. I can't remember. It was Hiroki Kato, the director of Code Veronica, signed for me when I had met them that day. I have the BSAA U.S. Agency watch that came with Revelations HD a few years ago. I have my Biohazard 5 PlayStation 3. I have my Xbox 360 that was bundled with Resident Evil 5. So obviously, you know, hearing these things, I'm sure you can imagine that they're pretty rare, but they're also very nice to have. And, you know, things in moderation are always fine. So I think, you know, if my collection stays around that level, for the most part, it should be fine.
And it isn't even like about having like, I need to get it down to 50 items. It's about getting it down to a point where you don't even really think about it anymore. Like, you don't.
Yeah, there's no number or there's no KPI that you should be giving yourself.
Right.
Don't say, okay, I want to make $1,000. What do I get rid of? That's not really what I recommend. And, you know, don't get it under 50 items, like you said. Just go with the flow. Don't be so statistical about it, because I mean, as much as we try to rationalize what we've been doing on this entire podcast, there really is no consistent logic.
No.
Right? It's just, you know, however you feel at that moment of judgment, right? You know, you might regret it later, you might not, right? Hopefully you won't. But there's no, like, fixed thought process that's kind of, you know, motivating us. It's just, how do we make ourselves feel better?
Well, I'm curious, because for you, because with me, when I posted that stuff, I posted it on Facebook and I posted it on Twitter and stuff like that. And I was surprised about how many people who told me I was doing something I was going to regret and that I was doing something that was wrong. And
did people say that to you?
I had at least 10 people through email, through Facebook messages, through posts saying, like, you know, you don't, like, you're not doing this, like, you shouldn't be doing this, or some of those people might be listening, so I'm not saying, like, you guys are, you know, a-holes or something like that, but it is literally, like, I want to say, you didn't read it then. You read the title or something like that, or you looked at the pictures and you didn't read it, where, like, I swear to God, I feel awesome about this right now. And if I regret, you know, getting rid of my copy of Outrun for the Sega Genesis, I can probably find another copy of Outrun for the Sega Genesis. I'm okay. And with all this.
Right.
And the other thing was, like, I was really surprised, and this is nothing against, you know, anybody that said this, but, you know, people that I know and people that I don't know started hounding me, asking me for this stuff. And I said, like, this isn't, like I said in part two, but, like, this isn't about me giving stuff out to you or to, you know, sell it to you. It's about me getting healthier more than anything, because it did. Like, that's the way that I look at it. It's like my mental health is in a better state right now. I've felt way better. I have a better understanding of how I feel about all this stuff now. And I know what's more important to me. Like, I know, like, my video game, like, CD collection, my music CDs, I know those are important to me because I love that stuff. And I know that is stuff that I love owning because video game music is really important to me. Obviously, like, it is to, you know, to you as well.
I find that interesting you say that, because when I posted my Tumblr, people were extremely supportive.
People were supportive, actually. Too. I was just, right. I mean, people were definitely supportive, but I was just surprised how many people were like saying, oh, you're thinking about this the whole wrong way. Like, this isn't the right way to think about this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm thinking.
I did not get a single bad message. I think maybe the quote unquote worst message I got was someone saying, you know, Alex, you inspired me to collect, and now I don't know what to do. And I felt genuinely bad. It was like, oh, I'm sorry, kind of feeling. But
it's funny that you say that, because people totally said, like, I'm actually, like, looking at my Twitter, like, replies. But some people were saying, like, oh, you know, I feel bad, or I'm sad that you're doing this, but whatever. I guess if it's making you feel better, that's cool. But
and
if anything, like, yeah, like, this is, like, you shouldn't feel bad that I'm getting rid of stuff that I don't want to own anymore. And I think some people who listen to the podcast were worried, like, oh man, this means, like, he's throwing away back in my play. And if anything, it's going to allow me to focus on this more. Like, I can focus on one game more, not get distracted by, you know, the 300 games on my shelf that I had never played before. I haven't, like, played for more than 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at least it sounds like you've played through most of your games at some point, right?
I've made sure they worked. But I got rid of a bunch of games that were in shrink wrap.
Yeah, I mean, a majority of my Resident Evil collection was in shrink wrap because they're repetitive versions, right? So I don't need to open the best version that I bought when I have the digital version on my PlayStation anyway.
Right.
But just on that note, I mean, one tactic that I use, like, if I feel like I really need something, I'm usually fine with the digital version. So I own the digital version of Smash Brothers on 3DS because that's a game I can imagine playing for years. Sure. So, you know, I didn't want to tempt myself into buying the physical version and then, you know, selling that at some point. So if I feel like it's reasonable to commit to owning a game indefinitely, then usually I just go digital. Mm-hmm. You know, you've talked about retro games, and I think that, you know, I'm a strong proponent of buying those digitally for convenience and for less clutter. I mean, although I can sympathize with the fact that some services don't, you know, give you good rights to owning those digital contents, but I think
Nintendo,
basically, yes. I mean, I think they're going to get better at that with their next system, the NX, but, you know, there's no guarantee. But digital, I think, is a good way to kind of offset that, because you can't really sell your digital content easily anyway. So, yeah,
for sure. And there's even, I was having a thought of maybe I should pick up Animal Crossing because it's on sale Best Buy this week for $20. But yeah, I'm A, never going to play that, and B, like, that's something I would want digitally anyways, because it's something you'd want to, like, pick up, you know, when you have an extra 15 minutes every day or something like that.
Right. And what was I going to say? Oh, like, I remember when my iPhone, I don't know if you've ever seen me tweet about this. I haven't in a while, but Like, I had one page on the iPhone 5S that was all Resident Evil icons.
Oh, like the like games?
Yeah, like, I would download, like, Resident Evil 4 Mobile Edition or iPhone Edition or whatever. And then I would download the Japanese version and the American version. And then the demo, the Japanese demo and the English demo. So I would have a row of Resident Evil 4 icons, and then I would repeat that with Degeneration and Mercenaries and these Resident Evil film-related apps. So when the screen kept getting bigger, I wasn't able to really complete, completely cover one screen with Resident Evil icons. But yeah, that was something else I got rid of. I deleted all my Resident Evil icons on my iPhone, so I don't have any Resident Evil games on my on that thing. So yeah, there was a bit of a digital element to this pruning of the collection as well.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's all weird. It's all weird stuff.
It's weird. It's really bizarre to be talking about. But yeah, I mean, we just felt that we had to do it. And I mean, if you have felt that, you know, there's something not quite right with you and your collecting, then, you know, maybe taking that first step might be good.
Yeah, and I'll recommend, like, again, if this is something that is starting to make you think about some of this stuff, I would go check out both the posts, like, you know, on the fitcast.com and on Alex's Tumblr, and, you know, check out, you know, how we went through the process. And, like, even I posted, like I had a couple rules for, like I mentioned a little bit during the show of how I decided to keep stuff. And I think for me, again, it's just like figuring out what is most important. And just I'm looking over at a bunch of, like, CDs. Like, I own CDs of video game music, and like, that stuff is really cool to me. And I still had, like, the Super Mario Brothers 30th anniversary compilation came in last week, and I have things pre-ordered. Like, there's a Chrono Cross re-release of the Chrono Cross and Chrono Trigger soundtracks that are coming out. And I mentioned, like, this, like, video game music that I've heard for the first time has made me actually discover games that I never knew about because of the soundtracks. Like, it could be something like Gimmick, or it could be something like Saga. I think it's Saga Frontier or something like that. Like, the Saga games have incredible soundtracks that I got linked to from checking out the Legend of Legacy soundtrack that got me to check out, believe it or not, Final Fantasy 13 soundtrack, which I bought, and I've never played the game, and I'll never play Final Fantasy 13, but the soundtrack's awesome. Like, the soundtrack's really good.
Right.
And that stuff I can listen to without needing to, like, I listen to it while I'm working. Like, when I'm working, like, video game music is stuff that you can listen to kind of over and over again. It usually doesn't have words in it, and it allows you to still, you know, type or go through emails and stuff like that, and it makes that process of doing work more enjoyable. So I can totally rationalize continuing to import music from Japan, because this isn't a money thing. Like, this isn't about, like, needing the money. It's about needing to have less stuff to think about. And video game music is not expensive. It's like $20 for a soundtrack or something like that. Like Alex said, with the weak yen, it does help out quite a bit.
Yeah, it's good that you still like game music, because I help run a game music company. So,
well, I keep telling, like, Muhammad, like, dude, just you let me know as soon as something comes up and I can pre-order it. Like, whether it's like Retroactive Part 2, I said, I want to be the first pre-order on that thing. Let me know when it's available, and here's my credit card number. Just you type it in, and you make sure it processes, and we'll be good.
Right. That should be a good one. Yeah.
So any final thoughts, and then maybe we'll do one more quick segment, and we'll talk about some Resident Evil stuff, and we'll talk about some other retro game stuff.
I guess it's hard to understand this if you don't have a picture, but I took a few of the core Resident Evil games, and I cut up the covers, and I took the discs, and I glued them onto these cheap IKEA frames, and then hung them on my wall. So that was, I think, another way that I ended up rationalizing what I was doing. So, I mean, it's not like Resident Evil is completely gone from this room, but I think that, I mean, if I do say so myself, the mural that I created is probably a lot cooler than any shelf will ever be. So, maybe I'll, yeah, I'll send you a picture of that and you can maybe upload it with the podcast later.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anyway, that's pretty much all I have.
Yeah, I think, just to reiterate what you're saying is, this is all about trying to make sense of this stuff for people that need to make sense of it. And mm-hmm. if you love collecting this stuff, if you like going to yard sales and flea markets and getting a complete like Super Nintendo collection or something like that, and you're having fun doing that and you're able to, you know, make sense of all of it and rationalize it, keep doing it. Like, that's awesome. That, I mean, we've both mentioned Alex still loves Resident Evil games. He still loves video games. I still love video games. Like, I don't need to own every single one of them. I don't need to own 1,000 of them. I just need to own what I have time to play and what I would actually play, not stuff that I just want to have on the shelf to have it. It's stuff that I want to play. So, maybe that will help you think about it a little bit more. And, I will say again, just make sure you check out before you make any like judgments. I think we both did a good job explaining this stuff in our writing, because it's always easier to write this stuff down and review it instead of just like kind of talk about it off, the top of our head. So give those a look.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll be right back. And believe it or not, we're going to talk about some more video game stuff. So stick around, hear some more awesome music. We're here for a final segment, and I just can't have Alex on without talking. We've been talking about Resident Evil a little bit, but talking about what is up in the world of Resident Evil. And you bit the bullet, and you played Resident Evil Revelations 2 on the PlayStation Vita. Give me a review, because I had this thing pre-ordered. I was going to get, like, I think it was... It was like the Asian version, so it had the English text on it, but it allowed me to have a physical version of the game for the Vita. Did I make a mistake canceling that pre-order?
Did you play the console versions? No, right?
No, I played like halfway through the 3DS version. I love that. It's still like it's on my list of like games that I should probably go finish.
Right. I would do that first, but. Yeah, Revelations 2 on Vita. I'm kind of two ways about it. One, it's good to have a handheld version because I think the Revelations series does kind of fit that very well. But technically, it leaves a lot to be desired. So there were a few glitches with the game. Lots of slowdown. The graphics were obviously toned down. And when I say toned down... Like, I don't even think they pushed the Vita to their limits, to its limit. It actually looks very similar in general to the original Revelations. Mm-hmm. But even it doesn't even run as well. So it was disappointing in that sense. But assuming that you don't fall victim to any of the stupid glitches in the game, you can actually play the game fairly comfortably. Mm-hmm. I think all the content is there. The raid mode was recently added via DLC. I think all the main game chapters are in there. The voice acting's in there. The audio is not that good. It's highly compressed.
That's a PlayStation Vita problem.
Really?
Like, I remember, I think when I got they released the white PlayStation Vita in the States, it came bundled with Assassin's Creed Liberation. And that game was kind of a mess. But the thing that stood out the most was that the audio was so compressed. Like, it was like compressed at like, it was like a 32 kbps MP3. Like, it sounded like absolute garbage and muffled and stuff. And it sounded like, when I watched the video of the Revelations 2 Vita Edition, like it kind of had the same problems.
Oh, that's too bad. I thought because it was digital only that they were very conservative about the compression and the space that the music would take up. But it sounds like it's hardware based, which is too bad.
No, it's not hardware. Well, I think it's because they knew they were going to put it on do a physical release too, and they didn't want to like jump up to the next, you know, cart size. So instead of being $2, it was like $1 for each one of those PS Vita cards or something like that. But I haven't noticed it. Like, there's tons of games. Like I said, I've been playing through Persona 4 Dancing All Night. Audio is outstanding on that thing. Persona 4 Golden, which is a gigantic game with tons of music and tons of spoken stuff, and it sounds crystal clear and fantastic. It's just like when some companies like cut corners to make sure that they can keep it on a small size card as possible or something like that.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, because I think Revelations 2 has some of the best music the series has seen in years. I mean, it's definitely better than Resident Evil 6's music, I'll tell you that.
Man, they didn't release a soundtrack for it.
It's probably for Revelations 2?
I'm just checking right now. They did. Oh, maybe it's just not on Amazon Japan. That's my barometer.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, what was it?
I'm sure you could get it off YouTube or something like that.
I think iTunes has it. Okay. Because there's a 3-disc soundtrack for that. Great music. Fantastic music, in fact. So
check it out.
I would recommend that people check it out. So yeah, I mean, it's other than that, it's the same game that was released earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. Very good story wise, a very good game that goes between Resident Evil 5 and Resident Evil 6, and the game ends on a bit of a cliff. Not really a cliffhanger, but maybe a potential hint to what they might do in a future Resident Evil game. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of reasons to play it. It connects well with the first Revelations as well. It has a lot of neat references throughout the series. So if you're into the story of the series a lot, then I think it should be a very rewarding game to play. It doesn't take very long to beat. I think it's actually shorter than the original Revelations.
I'll check it out, and you mentioned it's on Amazon, iTunes, and you're absolutely right. It's $17.99, and it is, like you said, it is 3 discs. It is a huge, it's 95 tracks.
Yeah, there's a typo in one of the track names. I don't know if it's a typo, but it says like theme of something, theme of Barry Cliff Hunger Edition.
Oh, weird.
Instead of Cliffhanger Edition. Like, I don't know if that's a play on the whole zombie thing or, you know, a typical Capcom typo.
Nice. Well,
I don't want to say too many bad things about Capcom because I work with them already. So,
well, if the worst thing you can say about them is they've had a couple misspellings on some of their cover arts, and sometimes they, have IGN logos on their cover stuff. So
that's a skew I'm keeping. The Resident Evil.
Oh, you have that?
Yeah, I didn't even open it. Like, it's shrink wrapped. I'm keeping that because it's just too funny.
Jeez. In iTunes, just, you know, pro tip, if you don't care about, I like owning the physical CDs because I like rip it into like ALAC, like the uncompressed Apple lossless format and stuff before I go to MP3. But the iTunes music store just has an incredible wealth of awesome video game music, and it's like from the people that you wouldn't even expect it, like the Legend of Legacy soundtrack, which is a 3DS game that's coming out in October here in the States from I think Atlas is doing it. The soundtrack is two discs, and it's like 4,000 or like 4,500 yen in Japan, but on iTunes it's like $13. And I swear to God, I swear it is the best video game soundtrack you're going to hear in 2015, top to bottom. Outstanding. And I believe that, like I said, that's how I got to Final Fantasy 13 soundtrack, because the composer of that soundtrack did some tracks for Final Fantasy 13, I believe, and people said it sounded
Hamaozu
like...
Hamaozu-san, right?
Masashi
Hamaozu. Yeah, it should be him if it's FF13.
Let me... I should check, but, you know, live iTunes price checking, and it's...
Small world, because... one of the writers on Legend of Legacy is working with us on Retroactive Part 2.
So, awesome.
So, former Tecmo guy, so who worked with Yamagishi-san.
Let's see. Okay, so it is, and I'm terrible, people know I'm terrible with Japanese names, but it's Masashi Hamaozu?
Masashi Hamaozu, yeah.
Okay, yeah, sorry, not as good, but... Again, the soundtrack $16 on iTunes in the States. Buy it or listen to it on YouTube for, you know, a couple tracks, and then buy it, because the soundtrack is just outstanding, and it will probably get you to, like, I pre-ordered the game, even though I don't know if I'm going to be super interested. People say it's like the Saga games, which got me to like check out the Saga music too, and I'm like, man, this music is outstanding. Like, it's just beautiful music. So that's why I got all the way over there. It's just one of those 7 degrees of Legend of Legacy things. I mentioned before, but I would totally recommend the Super Mario Brothers 30th anniversary 2-disc set. It actually has music from all the games in the series, from Super Mario Brothers, obviously 1, 2, 3, Land, 1 and 2, World... And
oh, I want that. Is that out in the States?
It's out in Japan.
Japan. Oh, okay.
It's I think it's like 3,000 yen, and it comes with, it's like a beautiful insert and stuff like that. It's just like one of those things that is worth owning. And if you're in the States, like, you can buy the stuff from Amazon Japan. Like, they ship video game music. They don't care about that. They use DHL. So usually if I order stuff from Amazon Japan, it gets to my house in like 36 hours. Like, it's next day shipping for like roughly $10, and you can probably add up to like 4 CD sets, and it will still stay at that price point before it jumps up to the next one.
And I thought it was fast for me. I mean, usually I think my record was like seven or 8 hours.
Yeah, in Japan.
Amazon Japan. Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same city, so that makes sense. But 36 hours all the way to the East Coast, that's amazing.
It's DHL efficiency. It's really, really good. And also, I with that order, I picked up the Gravity Days, Gravity Rush soundtrack, which of course, coming off of the announcement or the trailer for Part 2, and that soundtrack is also really unique and interesting. So I would check all that stuff out. But I don't know, and obviously, I don't know if you were super excited with the announcements in terms of Resident Evil at TGS. I don't know if there really was.
Yeah. I mean, I don't.
They're holding some stuff back. They're obviously working on 7.
Oh yeah. I mean, I can't speak for Capcom, and I don't want to, you know, talk too much about that. But I'm pretty sure it'll be announced sooner or later. I mean, the pattern is if a Resident Evil game comes out early in the year, they usually have something to follow up on that pretty quickly. And I even have examples of that going back at least 6 or 7 years. So, I mean, I don't think Umbrella Corps is going to be it for 2015. Not 2015, 2016. And there's also the Resident Evil 2 remake that's in development. So
that's right.
We will see more of that. Yeah,
six sold like 7 million copies or 10 million copies or something like that. Like, it just makes financial sense to, you know, make another Resident Evil game and, you know, take some of the feedback that they got from 6 and come back to form in 7.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm ready for more Resident Evil. I mean, Resident Evil 6 was released 3 years ago, so it's been a while. And I think that's, I think between mainline numbered entries, so ignoring Revelations, I think that's unprecedented when it comes to the amount of time that's lapsed between the release of the previous game and the announcement of the next one. Resident Evil 6 was announced just under 3 years after 5 came out. So, I mean, even that was pretty long, in my opinion.
Maybe they're timing it for the like release of the feature film. What is it? That's Resident Evil, it's Resident Evil 6, right?
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, usually they don't do too much of that, but sometimes it does happen. I mean, I'm pretty sure when 7 is announced, it'll probably come out that same year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I expect Umbrella Corps to hit and then 7 to get announced. First playable at E3, and then Gamescom, then TGS, and then out in the winter. Hopefully. I'm just guessing. I'm not privy to any of that information at all, but it should... I think it's one of the things,
it's from previous history. Like, it makes, you know, it's a good guesstimate.
Like, Resident Evil 5 was funny because that game took forever to come out, and so did 4. Mm-hmm. 5 was announced maybe 6 months after 4 came out, so... You know, there isn't a whole lot of consistency in terms of the amount of time it takes, but I think from announcement to release, even Revelations 2 was a very quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. I mean, Revelations 1 was not, so I don't know, but I just hope they announce it soon, and I really hope that it's not so heavy on the action like 6 was.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I think I played the demo of 6, and then it just took, like... Everyone, there was just so much negative reaction to it, like from like the 8-4 stuff and Giant Bomb. Like, they just kind of were not super happy with it. And hearing that I would have to play like 15 hours or 12 hours of a bad game was not super exciting. But I'm excited for more, like you said, like, you know, more Resident Evil is something that I think we can all look forward to if you're a fan of the series. And having that re-release of 2 is going to be awesome, which I love 2. 2 is great. I would hope to see it, like a maybe even a re-release of... I got 3 for Christmas 1 year. I really like Resident Evil 3. I think that game gets a bad rap, but I think that game could hopefully be next in line to get a remaster.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine them stopping at 2 at this point. I think 3 will definitely be remade at some point.
Nemesis is dope, man. Nemesis is a cool... I mean, that was a cool little thing to put in the game. Having that guy chasing you in the game was scary as hell.
The thing is, 2 and 3, and I guess even 1 and even 0 are short games by modern standards, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean... You know, I guess there's a small chance 3 can get remade at the same time as 2 and they can be out as one package. I mean, I think that would be desirable rather than making just 2 separate games. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, 3 would be very short, right? Unless they did a lot of drastic stuff with that game.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, I don't think 3 will be left unremade.
Well, I think I'm looking at my clock, and I should probably get to work for the rest of the day.
I should get to sleep soon.
Right.
But yeah, thank you so much.
No, thank you, Alex. And I don't know if there's obviously, you know, people can follow you at CVX Freak on Twitter. And also, you know, while you're doing that, and if you are on Twitter, make sure that you're checking out Brave Wave as well. And I'm even going to give Muhammad a little plug here at RoboKick for Muhammad, just because, you know, whenever I always talk to him about this, but, you know, it's good to talk to you about this too. I am always going to take advantage to support the things that you guys are doing, just because you are doing the stuff that, you know, I would like do if I had, you know, the expertise, the time, and the money to do all this stuff that you guys are doing with Brave Wave. I would want to do that too. So that's why I like to support it, whether it be, you know, making sure that you check out Retroactive Part 1. If you haven't already, Smoke Thief's album that went up a couple weeks ago is outstanding. Like, that game, like, I literally was listening to that album when, like, I think it was just like one of these days when I was getting like overwhelmed, I was getting like depressed, and I listened to that album while I went for a walk, and man, that album just like hit the spot at the right time. It was really, really good. And of course, you guys have been talking about the Street Fighter II arcade remaster.
Yep, we'll have more information shortly that we'll let you guys know what's up soon.
Of course. We'll definitely talk to you guys when it comes up. And go to bravewave.net/genseries to get some more info on that and to sign up for the newsletter so you can be aware of when that comes out, because it's going to be badass. And at Brave Wave Music as well on Twitter if you want to add another person that you follow on Twitter, just because, again, this is stuff that we need to support, and it's just outstanding work that you guys do. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Back in My Play. The show will be back. The show is continuing, and maybe I will get to Mega Man 5 for next episode, or it just happened to come out. Mega Man Legends is out on the PlayStation Network, so I've been playing some of that, and it plays really well on the PlayStation Vita when you remap the controls, so maybe that is something that we'll get to talk about down the road. But also make sure that you're following me at Kevin Larrabee on Twitter and at Back My Play, of course, on iTunes. If you like the show, you want to submit a review on there, I appreciate it. And with all this stuff, let's just have fun. Make sure that we're enjoying what we're doing, having fun, keeping it positive, and we will see you next time. Take care and have a great rest of the week.